paper. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Avid Gamer Podcast. I am your host, E.T., and this is the first podcast in 2015. Thank you so very much for all the downloads and listens and referrals. This podcast is growing pretty big. So thank you so very much, and Happy New Year to everybody. Yeah, I don't really have a State of the Union address to get into, other than we're just going to keep going and see how far we can take the podcast and the Avid Gamer brand. On the line right now, I have a friend of mine, Betts, who is a cosplayer and extraordinary blogger, who I love her blog, and she'll talk about it. But Betts, how are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing very, very well. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
One of my big passions other than gaming is comic books, and you have a quite excellent blog. So
thank you so much. It's kind of a hobby thing, so
it's extremely well written, and there's so many blogs and so many Twitter accounts and so many Instagrams developed to comic books, but yours was really excellent and awesome. That's why I asked you to join. So thanks for taking the time. So I kind of wanted to get into what are you reading? What are you thinking? How the comics and the comic world and the cosplay world, how they're all getting together. Would you mind talking about your background in the geeky arts?
Sure. I can totally give you kind of the very brief summation about that. I started out not being a comic book reader, actually. I started out watching, you know, the old Batman, like, with Adam West, with my father, and that's, I think, where I really developed, like, a love for superheroes. And then, as I grew older, you know, I had a couple sort of origin stories. I think the one that I remember is the DC one, and it was really old, and it had, like, the basic superheroes from DC, like Wonder Woman and Superman and all that, and that's where I started reading there, but I've always loved the world, and when I started doing the Marvel, I think it's really probably about, now it's like 15 or 16, but it had to be, like, a secret thing, because, you know, I grew up in a primarily Catholic household, and those things were for boys.
Right, so. Right. For comic books were for boys. That's a part of Catholicism I never got into.
Comic books were for boys. I could only own the female action figures, which back then you remember, like the 90s. So,
oh yeah.
Back in the 90s, you know, you could essentially pick from maybe Catwoman and Wonder Woman and a couple other, like, random, you know, villains, but that was, like, essentially your action figure basis when into stores.
I remember when a friend of mine got a female G.I. Joe action figure, and we teased the living shit out of him because it was, I forget, Scarlet. He got like a Scarlet action figure, and I remember the birthday party, essentially the record just stopped at the birthday. We just looked at him like, what? Who the fuck gave you Scarlet? Why would you get a female action figure? Good God. So, yeah, you're right. Back in the 90s, if there was a female action figure to be found, you had to hunt that thing down. And nobody was hunting.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, maybe your friend was ahead of the curve now that we're a little bit older.
Right. There's a certain, like, talking to the local comic shop guy that I go to, he's got like a group of guys that he's got to put the female action figures away for because that's all they buy. I don't know if it's a fetish thing. I don't know what it is. But I'm like, do you have that new Catwoman from the New 52? He's like, yeah, they're spoken for. I'm like, God damn. I mean, every single one. I'd love to see these dudes' houses that are nothing but female action figures.
Aesthetically, obviously, like, a lot of the female action figures are really beautiful, you know, they're created, and just, it's amazing what they can do with them, but I don't know, it might be, I mean, to me, cosplay also sometimes can be, like, a fetishy type thing.
You think so?
Well,
Yeah.
You don't think so?
Maybe a couple years ago. I don't know. The cosplay world has been so welcoming to me, and it's something that I've really gotten into, not dressing up, but just enjoying the past couple years. I mean, any of the big events, I always look for the cosplay pictures. Whenever I go to, like, local comic conventions, the cosplayers, I always try to get pictures of them and talk to them. I don't know if that's what it is anymore. It seems like the cat's out of the bag for the stuff that we're into, and it's, I don't know if it's a fetish anymore. I don't know. I'm still trying to process it.
I think it's just like anything. In my opinion, anyways, you know, you have the people that are there and they do it for, like, the love of the character. And because they're really huge fans of, you know, the graphic novels or the comic books. But I think that there's still maybe a couple people, a handful of people that you know, they have that sort of fetish. And to them, it kind of represents that. So, I don't know. I mean, do I have crushes on fictional characters? Yes. I can totally see it kind of being that thing sometimes, but I completely agree. I think it's definitely come into its own sort of thing. And, you know, one of the coolest things to me is when you get messages from people who are, you know, family people, like family men or women that are like, my kids want to, like, come and take pictures of you whenever you're in a Comic-Con dressed as this. Like, that's awesome.
Yeah, you know, I remember, I don't know if, you know, I think when Laura Croft first became a recognizable character, yeah, maybe back in 97, 98, and seeing a woman dressed as Laura Croft, it was like, holy shit, that's hot. You know, and you look at it for you looked at it for that point of view. But now I look at it, it's such an art. Now when I see cosplayers, I look at little details because I know that it's more than just buying a pair of shorts and a tank top. It's really spending hours and hours and hours on a costume, you know?
Oh, yeah. Especially those people that do those really expensive sort of, armor pieces.
Mm-hmm.
That in itself, like, I know people will take, I think one of them I saw took at least 6 months to a year or something like that. Like, that, just a level of ingenuity and, you know, almost like an architectural sort of stance with that. Like, that is mind-blowing what people do. It really is.
It is. And, you know, fandom of any level is something that I love, and that's why I started Avid Gamer, because if you know, fandom is passion, and passion will it causes people to spend a lot of money, but it also causes people to invest a lot of time and energy and creative energy specifically, you know, and and that's, you know, that's why I admire it so much. People will fly across the world to go to an event and show off something they've worked on for the past year. That's a level of dedication that you've got to applaud that. You know?
Oh, yeah. It's beautiful, really. Like, the fact that something like that can bring so many people together. And it's not just, you know, the cosplay. It's the comic books, too. Because, you know, essentially, a lot of the superhero stories that we read, they're basically, and this is how I explain them to most people. Like, to me, it's like an open love letter. You know, you're getting these characters that are doing all these amazing things for humanity without the promise of some sort of reward, and that to me is beautiful, that people can take, you know, that reading and kind of base their lives off of that, and it gives you hope for humanity itself.
Right, you know, you're right, and that's something I've talked about with people is, you know, cosplayers, it's an amateur thing, you know, there are very few paid, you know, or lifestyle, or, you know, paid professional cosplayers. People that do it are doing it for the love of the art. And that right there, that speaks volumes for it, you know? When did you start doing your cosplay? When did you start actively cosplaying?
Actively, I've only been doing it for, I would say, maybe a year now. It first started when I was kind of invited to be a guest at a local comic book museum for Cosplay for a Cause, which was to raise money for, you know, breast cancer survivors. And I ended up being Saya from Recommender's Deadly Class.
That's cool. And now you're doing Psylocke, right?
she's my girl. she's like the one character that I connect with the most. I'm doing a bunch of different things, though. Like, this May I'll be doing Gamora for a local sci-fi convention in my area. So I'm really excited for that because I get to be green.
Oh, cool, cool. Who is your who's your favorite character to cosplay?
Honestly, right now, I think my favorite is probably Duncan.
I'm sorry, say again?
I don't know why.
Can you say that again? I don't think I picked that up. Who?
Oh, I'm sorry. John Constantine.
Oh.
Hellblazer.
Oh, yes, yes. Is it due to the popularity of the show, or were you reading Hellblazer before, were you a fan of Hellblazer before the NBC series?
I was a fan before the NBC series. The writing that Garth Ennis did for Hellblazer, it was always phenomenal. Deadly Habits is, amazing as far as, like, a story arc. But I think it's because he and I are both kind of similar. He's kind of an asshole. But there's a lot of inner conflict there. And, I've always been a fan of supernatural, like, sort of, like, magic characters as well. So when the whole Constantine TV show came around, it was kind of one of those things. I was like, yep, have to do it.
What do you think of the show?
Honestly, I know that a lot of people have grudges with it just because, they don't necessarily show him smoking and things like that.
Yeah.
But, when I watched Feast of Friends, and I hope that I'm not spoiling anything for anybody, but when I saw the episode, I think it's called Feast of Friends, with Gaz, that's like the episode. Like, that was the thing that sort of won me over, and I bawled. I cried so hard.
Yeah, it's been a good season so far. All the episodes have been pretty impressive for NBC.
I know, I think so, and I think that if people look at the property as, something where they have the opportunity to kind of build it from here, that there are fantastic things that NBC can do with it. And it's something that I really enjoy.
And I kind of defend that show from, like, purist. I think John Constantine in the Hellblazer series was still obscure enough to where people that, kind of run in their circles can claim it as their own. It's not like Batman where everybody knows and has images. And NBC picking it up was almost like, I don't know, offensive to some people. But you've got to let that character kind of get out there. Of course, you can't have him being the way he is in the Frank Miller run, the early 80s. You can't, but you can still appreciate it. It's the essence of that character is still there. His arrogance, the humor, it's still there. They're still pushing the envelope with some of the gore. It's not like The Walking Dead, but they're still pushing the envelope with what they show,
Oh, I completely agree. And I think that people need to understand too that, and this is something that I've talked about on my blog, is that essentially anytime that you're taking, something that's based on, a comic book continuity, that if you're looking for every single tiny little flaw with something, that you're going to be able, first of all, to find, because it's never going to be 100% true to that timeline or that specific continuity. And ripping apart something that you should be enjoying, because God knows, 10 years ago, that wouldn't have existed.
Right.
It's kind of a step backwards instead of a step forward.
Yeah. And if, one of my favorite movies is Batman, Tim Burton's original Batman. And you can rip that movie apart if you just want to go by just comic books alone, But if you saw it in my little boy eyes, it was the greatest thing ever. And it really lit a fire in me. So it may not be true to the page. Sometimes a page doesn't translate well on the screen. But if it's got to be true to the comic book, it might not grasp an audience. It might not get people to watch. And then something you love is just not shared. We got to share it all. So we got to accept maybe some changes are made.
Oh, yeah, I completely agree. We've got to, see things at face value and be able to recognize something as, as its own own property.
Yeah.
And appreciate it for the fun that it is.
Well, I'm also happy that something DC had, you know, the DC has really, I hate to say lagged in the movie or the screen department, but Marvel's kind of kicked DC's ass. I don't know why. I have endless debates with people on this, but Gotham is good. You know, I like that. And I've loved the Nolan movies, and they've kind of hit and miss, where Marvel is continuously putting out good stuff. So for DC to pick a series that's not maybe their best seller or their best known, it's not, and to go with it and introduce it, is that's a pretty bold step for a company that needs to take bold steps.
I completely agree, and I think that as far as the DC, you know, properties themselves, that, yeah, Marvel has, you know, kind of a monopoly as far as the cinematic universe.
Yeah.
And to be honest, with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., if I'm being 100% honest with myself, I've not been completely, you know, religious with that, so I can't really speak about that.
Yeah.
But with DC, I mean, as far as their TV programming, you know, with The Flash and Arrow and Constantine, I think that they're sort of monopolizing, you know, the whole the television network. And I think it's kind of nice to see both sides of that with both companies.
Yeah, yeah. And you said that you got into Marvel as a teenager, like, you know. I kind of think, and I don't know if you agree with this, does it seem like DC is more young kids get into DC before they get into Marvel? I think I have a 4-year-old son, and he loves both worlds, but DC is something a little safer for him, I think. Superman, Batman, the Marvel concepts and the Marvel characters, that seems to be a little bit more grown up. Would you agree to that, or would you, not grown up, but maybe not so kid friendly? I don't know. I'm working on this theory.
No, it completely makes sense, because I think that as far as Marvel, in my opinion, Marvel is kind of a more developed sort of company as far as the writing of like their characters. You know, if you look at Kelly Sue DeConnick's Captain Marvel, you know, a lot of it is more character-based. It's one of those things where it's more involved reading, because, you know, there's kind of, how do I want to, I'm trying to think of how to describe this. It's almost like, it's less events, because I feel like you see a lot of, you know, really huge events, which is awesome, you
right,
know? And,
right,
Marvel's more a character-driven type entity where you almost have to be a little bit older just to be able to understand everything and all the undertones that they're presenting in their writing.
Yeah, no, it does. That makes a lot of sense. Marvel's always kind of had, I don't know, to me, you got to be a little more sophisticated in reading it. You know, I read with my son both Marvel and DC things, and my son's a huge Batman freak. He's 4. He loves Batman, and the hardest thing about Batman to deal with is his parents' murder. That I skip, you know. I don't give my kid nightmares. But it's hard to explain Wolverine to a child, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Batman I can explain in a few words. Any of the DC heroes, yeah, look, they're just guys who want to do good. It's hard to explain what a mutant is, you know.
I understand that. I mean, as far as even just, you know, like the fun characters like Deadpool, I mean, really a lot of it's centered towards, you know, older individuals, because there's a lot of sort of dark humor. There's a lot of different things as far as that you really can't tell a child or give a child and be like, here, read this, and they're going to understand it, or it's going to be suitable for them. And I think that as far as comic books themselves, that, you know, I believe that Image has a really, really great article on their website, and it's about using comic books in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
Just because a lot of the writing, you know, in comic books can be really informative, it can be really eloquent, and you're essentially learning some kind of, you know, moral at the end. It's almost like a fable. So I think that with this coming year that we're going to see a lot more of that kind of happening where, you know, comic book creators and publishers, they know that there are a lot of younger fans out there, and I think that it's going to be that as we evolve, we're going to kind of see more people understand that with children that there has to be a specific sort of writing for them, and that it is a good way to learn, you know, and a good way to take a reading in.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So what was your trajectory comic wise when you said you got into Marvel as a teenager? What were you reading? What initially pulled you in?
X-Men, just because you were probably a fan of the Nike's animation.
yeah.
I was too. And, you know, they kind of stayed with a couple things, you know, but it was never really super involved. And so when that came out, that's when I really started kind of looking into Marvel. And then from there, you kind of just fall, you know, because they have so many characters and so many team-ups that and they all kind of, you know, at one point crossed over with each other that once you delve in, you're kind of in.
Right, right. And, you know, if your love started, what year would you say your love started for comics in the Marvel DC worlds?
I would say it was probably 1999 to 2000.
Yeah, okay.
I really got into it. Just because, too, my city, we don't have, you know, I don't have an LCS close to me. I think the closest one to me is about an hour away.
Really?
So it's kind of a trek, even. Oh, yeah.
Where,
oh, yeah.
You don't have to tell me this. You don't have to give us, the listeners, your address, but whereabouts are you, do you grow up?
I'm from a very small town in central Pennsylvania, so everything as far as that, you know, it's honestly like about an hour to the one that I'm familiar with and that kind of know what my reading is. So it was a trek, and it was a journey to try and get those, you know, graphic novels and those comic books, but it was worth it.
Yeah, same here. I grew up in an extremely small town. It had just a small little peninsula factory town in Virginia. And my nearest comic store was about 40 minutes to an hour. And this is before... Oh, God damn. Yeah. Well, the worst part was, you know, I've been at like a bag and board kind of comic reader nerd. And I would have to get my comics off one of those spinner racks. You remember those?
Oh, God, yeah.
And oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And the worst part is the little other assholes in town that would pick those comics up, manhandle them, and stick them back on those racks. And by the time I got them, they were just in poor shape. And, you know, so if I wanted to get like a good issue was coming out, I'd have to travel to a comic store. I had to beg my parents to take me. If they would. Oh, that was genuinely sweet. Look at that. You had some sympathy for me. And if I could get there, then I would, you know, buy a couple issues. But it was hard times, so we kind of had the same upbringing on that in that sense.
It's the worst. It's the absolute worst. Because, like, if you go to places, I mean, as you're older, you're traveling to, like, bigger cities and stuff like that. And you go into places and you find, like, I was in L.A. during the summer, and I walked into a random comic book.
You still there? I think I lost you.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, you're fine.
So go ahead. You walked.
So I walked into, you know, this comic book store in L.A., and there's a factory sealed first print of the first part of the Dark Angel saga. Just, you know, hanging out in one of their back issues.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's just such a difference between, you know, the city you grew up in to, like, these bigger cities. And I think, as far as even myself, with that kind of experience, it kind of makes you appreciate, you know, anything that you find a little bit more, because it's so hard to when you're in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, people, you know, anybody that's a teenager today and has access to the internet, And growing up in a day and age where comic books are cool instead of, you know, just kind of a fringe thing, they don't know that there was a time where you could not follow a series too closely because you might not get the next issue. Now it's super, super easy. But so you got this really awesome blog, and you talk, you kind of address some issues. You take questions, is that, because that's what it kind of seems like. People kind of pose questions to you, and then you kind of blog about it.
Yeah, I essentially kind of started out, you know, because I was getting asked all these questions about, you know, stuff like, where do I start if I've never picked up any comic book whatsoever? Or where do I start if I don't particularly like MetaHumans? And, you know, it was just all these constant questions that were kind of, you know, the same. And I was like, well, if all these people are asking me this, then clearly there's more than, you know, the 10 people out there who has this question. So I'm just going to, you know, blog about it for fun. And the response to it has been, you know, it's been phenomenal. Like, people have been really supportive. People have been awesome as far as, you know, reading things that I write and giving me feedback. And I've actually, you know, I get a couple emails every couple weeks about how people have stumbled upon it and they picked up these titles or something that I've mentioned, and now they're like religious fans. And it's just a really cool thing to happen when comic books, obviously, they've been just a kind of hobby.
Yeah, and, you know, your blog, it's, I'll just throw it out there, it's The Power of the Dork Side. WordPress.com. Just so, did I get that right? Okay.
Yay.
Yeah, I want to plug the hell out of that because it's definitely a blog worth reading. You sent me your monthly pull list. Dear God, you have a pull box somewhere, correct? You have to, right?
Between Pennsylvania and LA, so it's kind of either I have a pull list, or if I'm in LA, then I'm going to a shop probably every other day, putting down something that I may have missed and that I need to catch up on.
So right,
it kind of goes back and forth.
What's your favorite book that you're reading?
Yeah,
I know.
Do you want a medicine, or do you want something that's non-
Or anything. What's the book you're most excited for every month, I guess I should say?
Honestly, I would have to say that it's a really big toss-up because I really, really love Jonathan Hickman's East of West.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's super well-written, and the storyline from, like, the time that I picked up the first trade was just amazing. But as far as writers themselves, I'm a Matt Fraction, like, weirdo. I love all his writings. The Sex Criminals has been one of those things that I'm just super involved with. The same with his run during Hawkeye that he was writing was, if you haven't read it, you need to read it because you'll die. It's so funny. And it's just Clint being the crappiest human being, not having anything together at all. It's so human that it's great.
You have to maybe after this, maybe text me that list because I've never really followed Hawkeye all that much, but I just, and now I liked him, of course. I like the Avengers and whatever. I just read Old Man Logan. I don't know if you ever read that or not. Did you read that?
Logan, that's a good one.
Yeah. And I've read it a long time ago. I just reread it and it kind of made me love Hawkeye again. So if you have some issues that you recommend or a certain run, you got to let me know.
Oh, yeah, I totally will. I will totally text you that because, to me, that's my favorite Hawkeye, just because the way he's written, like I said, he's just so human, and he talks about, you know, being the only guy on the Avengers who doesn't have these powers. It's great.
It's funny when you read these superheroes as neurotic. You know, I love a good neurotic superhero because everybody wishes they were a superhero, and a lot of superheroes, when written well at their core, they wish they were somebody else. They wish they were just the average Joe. So
it's a conundrum.
It is. I don't know. I would trade my life for Tony Stark's in a heartbeat.
Oh, Playboy,
you know, happens to be a superhero. Who wouldn't? Yeah, who wouldn't? So what else do you look forward to every month? Or, you know, you lean more towards the DC or more? Sounds like Marvel, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, but that's just because I don't get suggested a lot of stuff from DC, and when I do, it's kind of like one of those big events. Like, I read a couple, you know, as far as a couple standalone characters, and then I read Justice League Dark, which I really, really like.
Yeah.
And, but for the most part, it's Marvel. I mean, I love Captain Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
I love Charles Danvers. She's someone that I read that I think it's really important as far as the writing itself, just because it is, you know, it's female written, and it touches upon a lot of things that I think women go through.
Yeah.
But subtly, you know what I mean? And there's a couple that I was, like, on the Ghost Rider, I don't know if you've read it. I know a lot of people have qualms with it, but I really liked it.
The new Ghost Rider?
Oh yeah,
I haven't. What's the gist of it?
Well, essentially, it's about this guy who's kind of like the wrong side of the tracks, and you know he's street smart. He's taking care of his handicapped little brother, and something happens to him, and he becomes a Ghost Rider. And you know, at the core of it, it's essentially to, you know, be able to look after his little brother, which is really great.
Is it Johnny Blaze? Is he the...
No, his name is Robbie.
Okay.
He has a car, too. Some people are weird about that.
Well, I used to love Ghost Rider and Morbus and all of those, you know, but some of the... Marvel's revamped them in the past year, and they just didn't seem to... I don't know. They just didn't connect with me like they did some of the 90s stories did. I'll read so much, honestly, that you suggesting it, I'll go buy a trade. Do you buy trades or do you buy single issues?
It just depends on what I can find. Because some places I can find trades and some places I can find singles. I've been better with buying singles,
mm-hmm.
just because you can find all the variant art and stuff, which I love.
Yeah.
But, if I'm going to read, like, a big story like Easter Glass Door, you know, like an X-Men, you know, book, then I'm probably looking at a trade just because I have ADHD. It's better for me to have all of that information at my fingertips all at once.
Or you won't sleep. You got to know it. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'll drive myself nuts. Oh, my God. What's going to happen? I'm such a
cliffhanger. That's the worst, is being obsessive compulsive about a character and wanting to know and having ADHD. That's got to be maddening.
Oh, man. I drive myself crazy. Because I'm like, well, this is like, even with the cinematic universe, like, I'll be like, well, they did this in this movie, so this means this. I'm going to wait for 2 years to find out whether or not they announced it.
Well, you know, it sounds like if you're from two different, if you travel between L.A. and Pennsylvania, those worlds could not be two different. Those are two very different worlds. Are there people in your small town of Pennsylvania, I don't know if you still live there or not, that you can talk to about this? I know in L.A. you could probably.
No.
No? Okay. All right.
No. I mean, there are a couple, but for the most part, everything that I was ever told with comics or like nerd stuff in general, and the like, was that I shouldn't talk about it because people don't really like it when I do.
Oh my God.
Or they don't understand what I'm talking about, so I should calm it down a little bit.
Really? Wow, that's insane, because if you are a nerd guy in a small town, you just want, you're looking up at the sky going, oh, somewhere there's a nerd girl in another small town looking at the same star. So right now there's going to be a million listeners. There's going to be a bunch of guys going, where is this girl? Where? I want to talk. We'll talk. And I guess your cosplay, you get a lot of that in L.A. You don't get that much in Pennsylvania, do you? It's probably...
Yeah, I mean, with cons and stuff like that, like my city, we have that Firefly con every year, but that's like the first one, and it's probably only on its like fourth year, so it's still relatively kind of new. If you want anything bigger than that, you kind of have to travel, obviously, because you have, you know, Philly has Wizard World or Wizard Con and things like that. But here, it's a lot less than something like LA, which is sad. Like, I really wish there were more outlets because, you know, it's something that a lot of people have a really big passion for, that they aren't able to go to these big events and, you know, do all these big things. It would be nice to kind of bring more localized things to them so they could do it.
I went to a really cool con in Pennsylvania. Avid Gamer had a booth. It was, you ever heard of the Too Many Games Expo?
If you tell me the city, I'd probably be more familiar with the city. I haven't heard of that con though.
Oh, okay. I think it's Beaverton or something. Jesus, it's a small town, but it was a retro gamer con, and there was a ton of awesome cosplay, and people from small towns in Pennsylvania that are like, I'm a freak everywhere. I can come here dressed as Bowser and nobody judges me. And it was amazing. It was like just like what you talk about, people that can't talk about it in their small burnout steel, used to be steel town, that want to dress up like the Burger Chef or anything from an old Nintendo game. And they all congregated in this small town, this expo center, and it seemed like, it was fun, but seeing the cosplayers be able to reach out and touch another cosplayer was pretty fun to watch, you know?
Oh, yeah, it's mind-blowing, because you're kind of in this, like, secluded bubble, and you don't think that anybody else really is in the same stuff as you, so when you do meet somebody that's into it, you get really super excited, and then It's real. Like, you're a real person.
Yeah, it's funny because I meet people now and they're like, yeah, I grew up in New York City and grew up next to five comic shops. And I'm like, all right, asshole, I had none of that. You don't know how lucky you were. You know, I had none of that. So to your cosplay, I want to get in that because I know that you've got some events coming up. You want to talk about where you'll be?
Right now, I know that I'm 100% going to be at Sci-Fi Valley Con. I'll be Gamora. I don't know what I'm going to do for the other 2 days, because I know I talked with someone about doing maybe a couple cosplay where we were Ripley and Bishop from Aliens, but I don't know if that's going to happen.
Which one are you going to be?
Which one do you think is going to be?
just kidding. Quick question. You have tattoos. How do you cover that? Do you cover that up? I mean, you have visible tattoos. Not like me, who's got his one tattoos under my sleeve. What do you do with it? How do you do that? How do you cover that up?
Honestly, I mean, a lot of people, here's the thing, is that really traditional people, as far as, like, the reading and stuff like that, like, yeah, you're going to have people that are like, you tattoos, you can't be this person, like, that doesn't look right. But to me, I think that as far as, you know, cosplayers themselves, when you have stuff like that, that's kind of a distinguishing mark, that it kind of just kind of adds to the character and gives it your own kind of special feel. So I don't really like to, I'm not going to cover up my costume, like my tattoos. I don't usually, unless it's something where I'm going to be like maybe in full body paint where you wouldn't be able to see it.
Right.
My tattoo for me, and I'm that character, or portraying that character. It's not necessarily the actual character.
So that's a really cool point you're making, is cosplay now is not so much about exactly looking like, it's about your interpretation.
Oh yeah, I think that it's important, you know, because there's so many people out there that want to be part characters. I think it's really important to promote, you know, acceptance of these people, as far as, you know, the way that they portray things. And just things like body positivity are acceptance as far as maybe, you know, gender bending, because for some reason people don't like that either. I've heard qualms about that.
So you mean gender bending in the cosplay world, right?
Yeah. I've heard a lot of people don't like gender bending.
Yeah, You know, I'm kind of come from a small town, small southern town. I'm so liberal on that. You know, it's you got to do what makes you happy. That's your representation of that character. And if you're a girl, you can be Batman. Well, who the fuck says you can't? You know, my son is half Chinese. His mom's Chinese, and I'm average Aww. Average Joe Whitey. Yeah, and somebody told me it's like. My son calls himself Batman. He goes by the name Batman Adam. He's four. That's his. He calls himself Batman. He introduced himself as Batman.
And that's so cute.
It's adorable. I have to show you some pictures. I have to take some pictures. You know, every day he gets home, he has to wear a Batman shirt with his detachable cape. I mean, he's not just a casual fan. That's his identity. And I had somebody tell me, oh, well, it's a shame he's going to realize when he gets older, Batman's not Asian. And I'm like, well, who the fuck says this fictional character can't be this, you know? You can't limit. These are fictional characters that we're portraying. We can portray them any way we want to, you know? That's my feeling, you know?
Oh, I completely agree. And I think that it raises a good point is that, you know, as far as, you know, other ethnicities, like, we need these characters just to promote acceptance. Like, there should be more, you know, ethnic characters, because it's one of those things where you do feel isolated sometimes, because people tell you, like, hey, you should cosplay this person because they're Asian. Well, I'm not going to cosplay a specific character just because they're my ethnicity.
Right. And, you know, I always talk to people I've heard a few people have told me that about my son. I always go, hey, what color is Nick Fury? And they're like, oh, well, he's a black man. Samuel L. Jackson's black. And I'm like, yeah. I remember he was white, and now he's accepted as a black man. You can change. We can change who these characters are on the on the surface. Changes aren't a big deal. You know, cosplay it, whatever you want to do, whatever you identify with. They can be anything. They can be anybody. You know. Anyway, that's my small rant. Yeah. Well, yeah, I hear that two or three times. Oh, well, it's a shame he can't grow up and play Batman in a movie because he's half Chinese. Like, okay, all right, whatever. You know, who cares? I'm not going to tell my four-year-old that, you know?
Whatever, I'll petition for him to be Batman.
Exactly. Thank you so much. You're so sweet. So, okay, so you're saying you're going to be, which con are you going to be at? And can you say where it's going to be?
Sci-Fi Valley Con. It's in Austin, Pennsylvania. I'll be there. And then, really, the next con that I have after that is I'm definitely attending New York Comic Con, in October. So that's really the one that I'm planning for the most, because I've never been to something that big. So it'll be an experience.
What makes you nerd out? What's going to, you know, because that, you know, New York and San Diego, they're so huge now, and they're no longer just, you know, they're media events, and you have big celebrities. What's going to make you nerd out when you go there?
Just meeting writers. Like, it's awesome that celebrities are there, you know, and it's great that you get to be exposed to all these people who are portraying these characters, but to me, the real stars of everything are the writers, you know, and the creators that they came up with the character. They wrote specific story, like, lines or events. So anybody that I've read that I've been a really big fan of, if they're there, I'm probably going to fangirl.
Yeah. Are you going to, do you ever have people come up to you and get kind of, you know, shy when you cosplay? Have you had experience that yet? I would.
Not to an extent. It's sort of like a candid thing, just because most people that approach me or talk to me, they're kind of like, I might know you from somewhere.
Right.
So it hasn't been something yet where somebody has come up to me and recognized me because of the cosplay or because of my blog or something, but that would be awesome. I'd be excited for that.
I think if you keep going with the blog is so well written. If you keep going with it and it just grows the way I think it will, that's going to happen, you know?
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. No, thank you. anyway, I want to be respectful of your time. So why don't you, if you don't mind, tell the listeners, and more than likely they know where to find you anyway, because I'll put this on Instagram. And I don't know, you have a good web presence. Why don't you go ahead and tell anybody that hasn't any seen your work where they can find you, your Instagram, your Twitter, all that good stuff.
I am Betz Braddock Cosplay on Instagram, and that's Betz like Betsy, as in.
Yeah, that's Betsy Braddock.
I am on Twitter. I am Miss Lanchester, and that's LANCHESTERXXX.
Okay.
On Twitter. And I also kind of wanted to, if you don't mind, take a second.
Sure.
Because I know that this is a recent event. I kind of just wanted to, you know, dedicate this whole thing to the memory of Charlie Hebdo.
Yeah.
And
yep.
Anybody else that was sort of involved with that shooting.
What a crazy, you know, I hate to always use the word atheist. I don't understand extremism when it comes to violence. It blows my mind. That's a very sweet dedication, Betz.
Thank you. You know, it's important now more than ever that we realize that, you know, freedom of speech isn't always so free, and that as far as Americans, you know, we are guaranteed that as a basic, you know, unalienable right, and we should appreciate it in light of the fact that this has occurred.
Well, that's very sweet, and it's very poignant and timely, because this just happened yesterday. You know, the outpouring from around the world is just amazing, you know?
Oh, beautiful. It's really beautiful. You know, we should never be afraid to say what we have to say or be who we are.
Nope, because we're all living works of art. Yeah, so I'm going to sign off this podcast. Please stay on the phone while I sign this off, because I want to thank you personally off here. Okay.
No problem. Thank you for having me again. I really appreciate it.
Sure. Hey, this is the thank you for listening to Avid Gamer podcast. You can find me on Instagram at Avid Gamerware, Twitter, Facebook, all that good stuff. I want to thank my guest, Betz Braddock. She is totally awesome. You got to check her out. And if you see her at a con, go up, get a picture, shake her hand, tell her you heard her interview. And until next time, thanks for listening.